We're here on Daf Chaf Tes Amud Beis, following the two dots, Avo Lo Yilmod Bo B'Tchila, which is approximately 15 lines up from the bottom of the page. The Mishnah tells us, Avo Lo Yilmod Bo B'Tchila V'Lo Yikra Acher Imo, that if the Shomer Aveda finds a Sefer, he has to roll it out and air it out, but he should not learn from it if it's the first time around for him and he's never seen that material before, and he should not read together with someone else. And all these dinim are based on the fact that the shomer, the finder, has to be very careful about the sefer and see to it that it doesn't get ruined, it doesn't get ripped. Uriminu, we have a brisa, lo yikra parsha v'yishne. He should not read a parsha a second time around. V'lo yikrav parsha v'yitargem. And he should not read a parsha and then, as he's reading it, do the targum, because he's going to expand the time that he spends reading from the sefer, and that's going to perhaps sacrifice or jeopardize the sefer. There are two dinim here that limit and restrict the use of the sefer, the reading from the sefer on the part of the finder. One is that he shouldn't review what he's learning, let's read what he's reading twice. Number two, he shouldn't go looking for a translation, let's say pasuk by pasuk, or whatever it might be, parsha by parsha, that's targum, because in both these cases, the sefer is open for a long time and it might get ruined. V'lo yiftach bo yosef mishlosha dapim. He should not open it in a way that it's got three dapim. A daf is what you call a column, and if it's expanded very much, he might again rip it. V'lo yikru bo shlosha b'nei adam b'krach echad. And we don't allow three people to read it simultaneously from the same krach. Krach means the sefer itself, the volume itself. And the brisa prohibits three people from reading together. Says the Gemara, Hoshnaim Korin, apparently two would be permissible. Otherwise, the brisa should have told me a bigger chiddush that even two people shouldn't read it. Our Mishnah says that two people are not allowed to read it together. Lo yikra acher imo. Doesn't stipulate that this is a third party. Rabbi Lokasha. Rabbi says that the Mishnah that prohibits two people from reading together is Be'inyan Echad. Now, the way I'm interpreting it now is Rashi's way. We'll soon see that the Rambam interprets it the opposite way, because again, Abai says Kan Be'inyan Echad. I'm not sure what the word Kan means. I'm assuming, based on Rashi, that the word Kan refers to our Mishnah. And since in our Mishnah they're both reading it be'inyan echad, then even two people might jeopardize the safety of the sefer, because each one is reading that inyan. So he's very eager to pull, you know, the columns of the sefer towards him, and it might get ripped. But Kan in the Braisa, where the minimum that's prohibited is three people, but two people are allowed to read it together, Bishnein Yonim, that there are two different subject matters that they're reading. And probably each subject matter is on a separate column. So Ruvain, if he's reading on his column, on his side, and Shimon on his side, they're not going to pull it towards each other. There's no tug of war here, and therefore they're reading Shnei and Yonim. That's okay. If you add a third party into the equation, then there's a real fear that it might rip the sefer. So that's Rashi's pshat, that the first word Kan and the Inyan Echad, that's a reference to our Mishnah, and if two people are sharing the same Inyan, there's a fear that they might pull it, each one towards the other, and that would jeopardize the sefer. The Rambam explains it in the opposite way. The Rambam holds that when Abai says Shnei Inyanim, that's referring to our Mishnah. In other words, two people reading two different Inyanim, that's a fear of each one pulling it towards himself and ripping the Sefer. But when it says here, Kan Be'inyan Echad, that's a reference to the Brisa, where two people are reading it, and that's okay. There's no fear that if they're reading together, now there's no friction over here, so to speak. There's an overlap. They're both reading the same text, and therefore there's no chash that it might, you know, each one might pull it in his direction and might rip the sefer. The Toras Chaim here, as we've quoted many times, one of the great achronim, he has a question on Rashi, because the Brisa clearly states that even if they're reading two in Yonim, lo yikrabo shlosha noshim, according to Rashi, l'chora, we're talking about shlosha dapim. There are three columns, so why shouldn't they read together? The Brisa says clearly they shouldn't open it more than three columns. Apparently, they can open it three columns. After opening in three columns, each one of the three participants is reading from his own column, because Rashi says Mishnei and Yonim, there's no problem that they'll each pull it in his direction. According to the Rambam, it's very good, because the Rambam holds that if there are two in Yonim, then Ein Korin, because each one is going to pull it in his way, because he's interested in his Inyan. But if they're reading Inyan Echad, then they're all on board together. But according to Rashi, who insists that if we're talking about Inyan Echad, then each one is going to pull in his direction, that makes sense in one column. But if three people are reading it in three different columns, then why should there be any problem? So apparently you have to derive the conclusion that there are two variables that generate problems here in a chashash of kriya with an ayin. One variable is the amount of people that are learning the same inyan, and the other is the number of columns. The number of columns itself is a problem, because you're spreading open the sefer too much. But when you combine these two problems, the shlosha dapim in and of itself would be muta, but that's in a case of one person. Once you have two people, and how much more so three people, then three dapim becomes a problem. And therefore, Rashi would have to agree that even in the case of Shnei and Yonim, which is less of a problem, Lo Yikru Shlosha Noshe, because now you have the three columns, which increases the chshash of Kriya, of Mashiach in each direction, and three people. So the three columns and three people, that's going to be Osir. The Mishnah says, Motzah Ksus Menarech L'Shloshim Yom. If you find a garment, you have to air it out once in 30 days. That's the Chiyuv Hashavas HaFeidel. In Memra, shall we assume therefore the near Malila, that shaking out and airing a garment is generally recommended. It's a good thing. It's going to protect the garment. Ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan had a sentence, a proclamation, which is a Derech Eretz. It tells you how to live your life. Mishi Yeshlo Gardi Uman Pesok Beso, if he has a professional weaver who weaves garments, and the professional is in his house, is then Yenar Kesusa B'chol Yom, then it's a good idea to air out his beged on a daily basis, because even if in the worst case scenario something gets ripped, he can always ask the Uman to fix it. But as a general rule, you know, airing out a beged can go rough on the beged. It might cause some sort of tear. So if he has an Uman Pesok Beso, fine. He's got his gardi, his weaver, his local weaver. Then go ahead and weave it on a daily basis. And you'll rely on the Uman. You know, he's going to, he doesn't charge you anything because he lives in the house, so he'll do it for free. Or maybe he'll weave new garments to replace the old garments that got ripped. But in our Mishnah, the Mishnah seems to advocate that the finder of this beged should wave and air out the garment on a base on a regular basis once a month. Why? Well, he doesn't have a gardi in his house. Amri, the Gemara says that what did Rabbi Yochanan have in mind? B'chol yom, that's already difficult. But kashile, that's going to have a negative impact and will be detrimental to the beggar. But echad l'shloshim yom, Rabbi Yochanan never denied that once in 30 days, malile is definitely something that's beneficial for the beggar. So again, what's harmful to the beged is a daily kind of near, but once in 30 days is beneficial. That's the first answer to the Gemara. Ibai, same with the second answer. There are four answers to this Gemara. Lokasha, that which our Mishnah advocates, waving and airing out the garment, that's bechat. That's in a case where there's one person shaking the beged. Vaha betray Rabbi Yochanan is very inhibited about encouraging you to have two people shake it out together. Like, for example, very often when you cover a table with if it's a very long table with a tablecloth, two people will pull it from each direction, and that strains the tablecloth, and eventually, who knows what might happen. Especially, you have a plastic that goes on top of the tablecloth, which is a lot less sturdy. It may very well rip. So there's no problem in the case of our Mishnah where one person is shaking out the garment, but more than one person is. Rabbi Yochanan is finds it problematic. Ibai same. The third answer is lo kasha ha bida biyada or bida, which means in his hand. Veha bichutra. The problem that Rabbi Yochanan is careful about is bichutra. Chutra is a stick. You'll see it in the Chadgaja. Veasa chutra he calls lechalba. You know, it's, if you have a stick, then you know you beat the garment or the cloth or the shatiach, and you might damage it. But if you're just shaking it out by hand, as the Mishnah advocates, that's not a problem. Ibai same a fourth answer. Lokasha ha bida amra. Amra is tzemer, as we know from tzitzis, and in that case, the wool is a little bit soft, pliable and vulnerable, and therefore if you shake it and you shake it a little bit too hard in order to stretch it out, it may indeed rip. But our mission that advocates shaking out the garment is talking about bidikisna kisana, which is a garment made of linen, and a linen garment is much tougher, and he doesn't have to worry about niyor, about shaking it out. The Rambam has the exact opposite. He thinks that semer, a woolen garment, is not a problem to be menayer, whereas a pishtan garment is more difficult, is more vulnerable. Having mentioned Rabbi Yochanan's recommendation about being careful about shaking out a garment, the Gemara goes on to give us another few statements of Rabbi Yochanan regarding Derech Eretz, you know, about a logical and a wise way of leading your life. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, kasa de charshin velo kasa de poshrin. This is what you call the lesser of two evils. Rabbi Yochanan says, if you have two cups to drink, you know, you're very thirsty, both of them are pretty bad. Which one is worse than the other? One is kasa de charshim, which is a cup that was prepared by sorcerers, machashefim. You don't want to go near that. Who knows what spooks you'll get on this cup, and that could be very detrimental to your health. But your other option is even worse, says Rabbi Yochanan. That's a cup of poshrim. That means lukewarm or you know, temperature warm water. And that's very, you know, if either you boil the water and it kills the germs, or you drink the cold water. But poshrim, he says, is very detrimental to the goof. Avoid it at all costs. V'lo amara, but the Gemara qualifies this statement of Rabbi Yochanan, ela b'kli matachos. That's if you're drinking this lukewarm water in a metal utensil, a metal cup. Avol b'kli cheres, but if it's in an earthenware cup, less lanba. That's not a problem. And not only that, u'b'kli matechos nami lo amara, and even in a case of a metal cup, when should be careful not to drink lukewarm water, ela delo tzvit. The water never boiled. Avol de tzvit, if it was already boiled, even though it's now cooled off and it's lukewarm, less lanba. Because once it reaches the boiling point, that kills all the germs, and you don't have to worry about it. V'lo amaron, and when did Rabbi Yochanan say that you should avoid this lukewarm water, el delo shada be tzivaya. Tzivaya are certain ingredients. Rashi lists a whole bunch of them that if you add them to the water, it rectifies any dangers and removes any dangers from drinking the lukewarm water. What are these tzivaya, these added ingredients? Rashi says, kol davar shenosen l'toch hamashke, anything that you add as an ingredient into the drink is called tzivaya. And he gives you, let's see how many examples. Oh, asavim, some sort of a grass. Oh, tavlin, or spices. Oh, ikre besamim, or I guess the roots of besamim. That's what the Gemara says. Aval shada be tzivaya leslan ba. Then, if he does so, then there's no problem. Again, what exactly is the beneficial dimension of these added ingredients, or for example, of placing the water in an earthenware utensil? I'm not sure about that. That has to be taken under advisement. Here, the Omer Rabbi Yochanan, another statement, another dictum of how do you lead your life in Derech Eretz, in order to preserve your wealth and to avoid losing your money, is Rabbi Yochanan says, I'll give you a definite recipe for someone who wants to lose his money. Number one, Om Rabbi Yochanan, Mishi Niach Lo Aviv Mos Harbe Verotzali Abdon. If he has a desire to lose the fortune that he inherited from his father, Yilbash Bigde Pishton, he should wear the most expensive linen garments. V'yishtamesh b'klei zchuchis, and he should use glassware, very very fragile. V'yiskar polim, and he should hire workers. V'al yeshev imayim, and he shouldn't supervise them. So he leaves his workers unsupervised. The Ritva has a slightly different girsa here. He says, Mishe niach lo aviv mos shel ribis. And Rabbi Yochanan is actually telling you how to lose these mos. These mos were taken as interest, as usury, and that was illegal, and the Yorshim want to get rid of it. They don't want to hold on to this ribis. And of course, the Ritva says, l'chatchil, the best way of doing it is to return the money to the borrowers. But Rabbi Yochanan is talking about cases where he wants to teach you Derech Eretz, that a person shouldn't get used to losing his money, and therefore Rashi says Lamdenu bo shelo yargil on the mekach ha'osa elu ma'abid maher hon rav. A person who does this on a regular basis is going to lose his fortune. And now the Gemara clarifies. The Gemara says Yilbash Klei Pishton, what did Rabbi Yochanan have in mind? Bikisana Romisa. This is Roman linen garments. You know, they come from Rome. They're very expensive, and they're easily destroyed. And Yishtamish Bekleis Chuches Bizugisa Chivarta. This is the white glass that, again, is very, very dangerous, very, I should say, vulnerable and fragile. Tosus here, Dibriya Maschil Bizchukis, is bothered by Gemara and Sota. The Gemara says that after the Churban HaBayis, they no longer had Zchukis Levana, and Rabbi Yochanan was way after the Churban HaBayis. And Tosus reinterprets, it doesn't mean that there was no longer, you know, you couldn't find a white glass anywhere, but it means it wasn't mitsuya, it wasn't common. And the Gemara tells us in Masechta Brachos about Rav Huna, that at the wedding of his son, he took gold glass and he smashed it, so that people shouldn't get carried away with the joy of the wedding and lose their sense of the seriousness of life. But you see clearly that white glass was available, although it was rare and very, very expensive. And then the Yiskar Polim Val Yeshev Imaim Targuma Bitori Dinafish Pseidaihu. We're talking about oxen that do basic work in the fields. For example, you take an ox for plowing the field. That's called harisha, or let's say when you harvest it, you use an ox. This is a very powerful work animal. So the avodas karka is done by shvar, by oxen, Rashi says. And nafish pseidayu, if you're not careful about these polim who are in charge of the oxen, they're the ox drivers, then you may suffer tremendous loss, because these ox drivers are not careful about the moment of balabais. You know, they just want to get paid for their very hard physical labor. And what they do is, they actually cause their tight spots to get by. They don't mind, they don't pay any attention if the shah has to go on top of, you know, thing, you know, plant, you know, plant nitios, you know, little young saplings that were just recently planted, or vines, they can destroy it. And that's the mazik of the shah. The shah is a very heavy animal. Tosus has a different gears in the name of Rabbeinu Chanal, Bitvari. And what does that mean? These are polim hamolichim es hashvarim lecharisha, enom ma'amikim es hamachresha shlosha tfachim v'en ezer niklat heitev. It takes an extra effort of work in the plowing to make sure that the plow goes deeper down, three tfachim, so that when you plant it, the zera will be niklat. The Ben Ish Chayin is Ben Yoyada, is trying to find other explanations as to why he niach. Rabbi Yochanan describes a scenario of he niach lo aviv mos harvi verotza liabdom, that these mos that he inherited from his father, dafka those mos, he wants to lose them. So we said in the name of the Ritva, because those were illegally gained mos. But the Ben Ish Chayin offers other possible interpretations. He says that he has children, Nebuchadnezzar Rishoyim, and those most that he inherited from his father are very known to his children. He can't hide them from him, and he doesn't want his children to inherit them because they're Banim Rishoyim. And if he'll be Magdish them, or he'll give them to as a gift to someone else, his children will rise up against him, and they'll do evil against him. They'll harm him. They'll harm their own father. That's how evil they are. So we're looking for a way of losing this moment, of being ma'abi this moment, in a way that the children won't even know about it. Because again, he doesn't want his children to inherit this money and use it for their evil ways, for their averis. So if Yochanan says you want to get rid of this moment, these specific mos that the children know about and they want to inherit from you because you inherited from your father, this is what you should do with these mos, and separate them in such a way that by using it for X, Y, and Z, the money will get lost, will get destroyed. He offers another interpretation that for some reason there's a whammy on these mos. Nigzar aleim shei abdu. There's a gzera that these mos that he inherited from his father will be lost. Again, he doesn't tell you what omens he saw to reveal that to him. But so now he wants to separate them from the rest of his mos, to protect his rest of his mos, because if he mixes them together, then when whatever catastrophe is going to hit, it's going to affect all his mos, all his possessions. So he wants to separate them. This is what he should do with his mos in order that these mos singularly will get destroyed, but not the rest of his mos. So these are the eitzes, the three eitzes that he gives you, Rabbi Yochanan, in order to ultimately lose mos. So we have a session here, according to the Ritva, according to the Ben Yoyada, how to lose your money, when you have to lose your money, or you want to lose your money, or it should be lost. Now here on the top of Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, just to start the Daf for today, today's Daf, is we have in the Mishnah, Shotcha Litzorka Avalolich Vodo, which means that the Mishnah says that when you stretch out this garment and you are benefiting the owner of the garment who lost his garment because it's litzarka, it's for its benefit, you know, to air it out, etc. Avalolich vodo, but he shouldn't do it for his own honor. It means that, you know, you can use these beautiful pieces of garment, of cloth, or shtichim, various kinds of carpets and so forth, to beautify your house. Just from an aesthetic point of view, if you stretch it out in such a way that it beautifies the house, people come in and they, wow, it's so colorful, it's so beautiful. That you're not allowed to do. You're only allowed to stretch it out for the benefit of the owner, but not for the purpose of, and for the goal of enjoying it for yourself, to adorn your house, beautify your house. That you're not allowed to do. Iboiluhu, the Gemara raises the following suffix. Litzarko ulitzarko mai. Is it permissible to spread out this garment in such a way, or this carpet, whatever it might be, that at the same time it benefits the carpet, and therefore the owner of the carpet, and the finder, the owner of his house, where he took in this carpet, and it beautifies his house? And here the Rishonim ask, but wait a second, we've already learned that in the case of Sfarim, when he rolls out the Sefer in order to air it out, he's allowed to read and learn from the Sefer under certain strict conditions, but nevertheless he's doing it, he's reading it now for his own goals, his own benefits. And Tosfos Dimarach Zilitzarko says Dafka b'shituach susmi boile etc. Behold the davile. The shema yanichenu shtucha yoser mikdei tzarchat shis kalkel. I will sefer amini de kori behen afagav de litzarko hu kavol litzarko v'lo gazvin delekel lemechesh lemidi kaven shekavol ozman echad l'shloshim yom echad yid beis chodesh. So Tosfos says that because of all the conditions and the strictures that were imposed upon the reader when he airs out the sefer, we're not worried about any sort of kilkul that'll damage the sefer. But in the case of stretching out, spreading out this ksus, then since there are no conditions here, he may decide to leave it there for a long period of time, and because he's enjoying it so much and benefiting so much, as a result of this, it'll bring to kilkul. So that's Tosus's approach to answer this question, and we're afraid that he'll leave it there, this carpet, yoser mikdei tzarcha, to extend it to a longer period of time, actually it's kalkil. Now, in the case of klei nechoshes, which we said you're allowed to use them, or klei kesef, klei nechoshes means cups where he uses them for even for hot water, but in the case of silver cups for tzonen, even though he's getting benefit by using these cups, he says there's no chash kilkul if you use it in that way. The Ran offers a different approach to this, to explain the difference between Sefer and Ksus. He says, in the case of a Sefer that he's reading from and he's learning from, we are absolutely certain that the Baal HaVeda, the owner of the Sefer, would be happy, would give his nod of approval because it's a mitzvah and he wants a mitzvah to be done with his Sefer. In the case of Klei Kesef, where they were matir his drinking from it, Litzarko, is since the owner of the Klei Kesef, of these utensils, knows that if it won't be used, it's going to get rusty, and it's a real Torah guttle to remove the rust. That's a real to-do, a real hassle. So therefore, the owner of these cups would have a vested interest in permitting the finder to use these cups. But in the case of Ksus, you know, that's just shticha bi'alma. You know, it's not too much to expect of the finder that he stretch out the Ksus. And therefore, there's no fear that he won't do what he has to do, and the Bailim do not want to endanger their object. They don't feel they have to do a quid pro quo and give some sort of chupara gift to the finder and allow him to use the carpet and benefit from it in his own way. But to quote the Toras Chaim again, I think his approach is unique and very profound. He conceptualizes. He says that the Gemara had no suffolk in a case where he's motivated to take care of the object for the benefit of its owner, and Mimela, as a secondary result of it, but it's not his primary objective, he gets benefit from it. That for sure is okay. In the case of the Sefer, he doesn't need to read and study from the Sefer that he found. He has his own Sfarim. In the case of the Klei Kesef, he has his own Klei Kesef. There would be no question in that, in those cases, that he can have Hanoah as a secondary objective. But what happens when perhaps he never would have been motivated to spread out the Ksus for the benefit of someone else unless he really had his own benefit, meaning he doesn't have this kind of a garment or a carpet to beautify his house. So I would say he has two primary goals. He's motivated by, number one, his desire to embellish and beautify, adorn his house, and at the same time, he's motivated to fulfill the mitzvah Shavas Aveda for the benefit of the owner of the object. Here he has two primary motivations, and that's where the Gemara has this Iboilahu, dafka in the case of stretching out Shtichas Haksus. And that's what the Gemara says, Litzarko, Litzarcha. Interesting, Litzarko comes first. It's almost as if, you know, he's motivated here because of his own benefits. Tashma, let's go back to the Mishnah. Shotcha, Litzarka. The Mishnah says that he stretches out this garment and airs it out, Litzarka, for the benefit of the Ksus itself, implying holitzarko ulitzarko. He was equally motivated by the objective of adorning his house and benefiting from the shtichas haksus, that would be low, that would be also. The Gemara says, but wait a minute, ema seifav lo lichvodo, not for his own honor, lichvodo hu delo, meaning what's motivating him is purely lichvodo, implying holitzarko ulitzarko shapidomi. If he was motivated by double motivation, he had two primary goals, one for the benefit of the ksus and its owner, and one for his own personal benefit, shapidomi be okay. In other words, we're left with the yukim sosurim here from the reish to the sefer of this Mishnah, elamehal lekel mishma mino, and therefore we have no conclusion to be derived, no definite conclusion from the Mishnah. The Pnei Yeshua has an explanation here, which we'd like to add to this discussion. And before we get to that, let's just point out that you can interpret the Mishnah when the Mishnah says Vishotcha Litzarka. What the Mishnah really means is, this could have been a logical possibility, that anything that's not Litzarka, in other words, the finder is not motivated primarily for the benefit of the Ksus, that's like Lichvodo. And therefore, Aval Litzarka, Litzarka, Nasa, Kimisha, Shotcha, Lichvodo, Viyasur. But the answer is that since it says Aval, the word Aval seems to tell you that this is the case that's Asur. And then end up with the Diyukim Sosrim. The Pnei Yoshua says that Lemedayik Me'aresha Huksha. If you want to emphasize the Resha where it says that Shotcha Litzarka, the question is, why did the Mishnah have to emphasize that it's Litzarka? After all, if you go back to the beginning of the Mishnah says Kori B'Sefer, which is called Litzarechach Sefer, meaning that there was lechora no need for the Mishnah to emphasize sheshotcha litzarka, since it already was explained at the beginning of the Mishnah that you're allowed to stretch out and air out the sefer because that's called litzarka, that's helpful for the sefer. It must be that the reason why the Mishnah wrote litzarka is to emphasize that the shticha has to be in a way that it's litzarech haksus exclusively, and he's not benefiting from it. So that's what bothers the Gemara in the Reisha. The Reisha seems to assume that the emphasis here litzarcha is that it's exclusively litzarcha. If on the other hand you read the Seifa, then when the Mishnah says avalolich vodo, that seems to be totally superfluous, because we know from the fact that it says in the Reisha that it's litzarka that he cannot stretch it out lichvodo, and it must be therefore that the Sefer is coming to tell us that only if he's motivated exclusively by kavod for his own benefit, then it's asur. But if he does it for both his own benefit and the benefit of the ksus, it should be mutar. And therefore the Gemara comes to the conclusion that from our Mishnah you cannot draw any definite conclusions about the case of Litzarko Ulitzarka. And the balance of this sugya here on Daf Lamed is to try to quote other sources, other brises, in order to possibly come to a conclusion about this Ibailahu of Litzarko Ulitzarka. And Amir Tz Hashem will pick that up in the next year.